Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Few people understand either the intelligence or the nature of that war better than our first guest. He is Bill Roggio. He is the managing editor of an extraordinarily important online resource. It's called The Long War Journal. He is a senior fellow with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which sponsors The Long War Journal. He's also a combat veteran himself and has embedded with all kinds of militaries, including ours, for the purposes of understanding and covering extraordinarily well the nature of the various conflicts, kinetic and non-kinetic, that we find ourselves engaged in. Bill Roggio, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Always great to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. Always a pleasure.
Well, we mostly talk about the Islamists, Bill, and what they're up to and the threat that they represent, and we'll get to that here momentarily. But I do want to start by at least taking note of and getting your thoughts about what appears to be increasingly a very overt Russian invasion of eastern Ukraine. We're hearing reports of columns of tanks and armored personnel vehicles and the like, artillery pieces, moving now into Ukraine proper. Talk a bit about what is going on there and why we seem to have such a hard time understanding that what's going on is just that.
Yeah, you know, I find this one stunning. I mean, the Russians have been duplicitous in their involvement in Ukraine from the start. You know, you could see pictures of Russian tanks crossing the border and entering Ukraine. Pictures are pasted all over news sites. And, you know, we still have to talk in terms of, you know, well, the Russians may be violating. Everyone knows what's happening. You have international observers spotting trucks that are marked, that remove the bodies of soldiers, of dead Russians, which means Russian military forces are engaged in combat operations in the Ukraine. And everyone's looking for some kind of peace agreement, ceasefire, whatever, and they just refuse to recognize what's actually happening, and that is that the Russians have cast aside the latest ceasefire and have engaged again in hot combat operations. And look, I don't think it's Putin is seeking to expand his control of the republics that were lost after the collapse of the Soviet Union. I don't think it's any secret. He said this several times, and we continue to operate in a way that so we can give him cover, basically, because we don't really want to deal with this problem. I mean, this is the same problem we have with dealing with Islamic jihadists. We refuse to recognize the nature of the threat and try to define the threat in ways that makes us comfortable, so we can do less.
Boy, I think that's very well said, Bill, and unfortunately all too true, and made all the more outrageous by the fact that the State Department, and for that matter, really, the government more generally, seems to be all too willing to engage still further with Vladimir Putin on any manner of deals or other kinds of relationships that I think you've got to believe are not terribly reliable, shall we say, under the circumstances. Let me turn to some of the other things that you're covering at the Long War Journal. And again, our guest is Bill Roggio, its managing editor. Bill, I'm a little confused. It sounded as though President Obama was kind of acknowledging what, well, you've been reporting on for quite some time, which is that there really aren't any moderates to speak of in Syria, people that we could safely, reliably arm and train and fund as a kind of counterweight to the, you know, problems that we're witnessing today with the Islamic State, among others. What are your thoughts on that?
For once, I would be surprised. I mean, I actually agree with President Obama in something on in the Middle East, because I'm in agreement with that. I think he should recognize. Look, it's without a doubt there are likely some groups. The question is A, are they effective? And B, are they willing to not just combat the Assad regime, but combat the jihadists. And the reality is with these groups is that neither A or B are true. And sometimes these groups mask themselves as being moderate, and then they fight alongside groups like the Al-Nusra Front, which is Al-Qaeda's official branch inside Syria. So there may be some moderate groups, but identifying them, vetting them, and then actually having them make an impact on the battlefield. So let's say we arm them, and then the Nusra Front or Islamic State comes along and just takes their weapons from them. That doesn't do anyone any good. So if President Obama, and it does seem to be that he's starting to recognize this, he'd at least be getting something right. We have to recognize the realities on the ground in Syria is that the jihadist groups, whether it be the Islamic State or the Nusra Front or a whole host of these jihadist groups that are operating, they're the ones that are the real players in the opposition to Assad. So, you know, if we decide to arm these marginal Syrian rebel groups, the odds are they're going to be identified and overrun by the jihadist groups. Their weapons will be taken, and all we'll wind up doing is arming our enemies.
And I guess there is actually some evidence, Bill, that the folks that we've been arming, the Free Syrian Army, what have you, have actually not only been overrun in some cases, but they simply have defected or at least surrendered to more powerful forces. So in all of these respects, it's a fool's errand. Bill, the president has said explicitly that he is modeling his so-called strategy for dealing with the Islamic State after that has been used in Somalia and Yemen. For the moment, let's just focus on Yemen. What is it that is likely going to happen to us with the Islamic State if this model is in fact applied?
Yeah, look, if Yemen is the model of success, then we may as well just not support anything in Iraq and Syria, because Yemen is an absolute basket case. Right now you have the Shia Houthi rebels who are backed by Iran. They've overrun the capital, and they're advancing south and westward in Yemen, and they've taken control of large areas. And then the Yemeni military, like the Iraqi military, is largely ineffective. They've either sided with the Houthis or have stepped aside. And so what you have is Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. They're branding themselves as the defenders of the Sunnis, and they are the ones that are actively fighting the Houthis. And their ranks are growing, and they've retaken control of some areas in the south.
As a practical matter, does this really mean that Iran has effectively taken over yet another of these states, these Arab states, Bill Roggio?
Yeah, at least half of it. I mean, that's the way this is, and that's what's happening in Iraq right now. And obviously in Syria, the Assad government has always been backed by Iran. So yeah, I mean, look, Iran is on the rise right now. They have to be looking at what's happening, and their influence has grown significantly since the Syrian war began in 2011. I don't think even the Iranians could have predicted how their influence would be spread on the Arabian Peninsula and in Mesopotamia and Syria.
But they're certainly capable of taking advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves, and we, I must say, seem to be presenting them left and right, to say nothing of the nuclear deal that the president is now conjuring up.
And frankly, that's because they're willing to take risks, and we're not. They're willing to put combat advisors and things of that nature.
They're playing the strategic long game, if you know so well from your coverage of the long war. Bill, just very quickly, we've got about a minute. There is a civilization jihad that the Muslim Brotherhood is engaged in addition to all of this violent kind. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the inadvisability of having Muslim brothers do a prayer service at the National Cathedral tomorrow.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me that that groups want to engage the Brotherhood in manners such as this. All they do is grant the Brotherhood, which shares the same goals as Al-Qaeda, which is the implementation of Sharia and the establishment of a global caliphate. Yet they just, they're stealthy about it. They just want, they're fighting a, as you said, a cultural jihad.
Which makes it in some ways more dangerous in dealing with a country like ours, which is seemingly blind to this kind of subversive, stealthy form of penetration and destroying from within. Bill Rozier, we have to leave it at that. I'm sorry to say this has been, as always, a stimulus for the desire for more conversations. We look forward to having one with you next week. In the meantime, keep up the terrific work you do at the Long War Journal and, of course, at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And we'll talk with you soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Rick Fisher about the buildup of the Chinese military and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're visiting with Richard Fisher. He is, by my lights, really one of the preeminent experts in the United States and probably the world, really, about what Communist China is up to in terms of its military, its modernization programs, its power projection capabilities, its strategies for dominating its region and perhaps beyond. He joins us from the International Assessment and Strategy Center, where he is a senior fellow in Asian military affairs. His most recent book is China's Military Modernization, Building for Regional and Global Reach. Rick Fisher, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank.
I'd like to get sort of just at the 30,000 foot level, your assessment of what China is up to, Rick. And it is clearly amassing a remarkably impressive amount of resources and capabilities in terms of its military. Talk about how that's being made evident and for what reason.
Let's look at this in three layers. The first layer is to put together the space missile, air, naval systems needed to keep the Americans well away from China in Asia so that it can go after Taiwan, the South China Sea, the East China Sea. A second layer will then add, starting early in the next decade, a drive to power projection, global power projection, aircraft carriers, hundreds of C-17 size transports. And then a third layer, which will start taking off at about the same time, will reach into low Earth orbit and beyond. China will seek to control the Earth-Moon system so that it can better prosecute successfully military operations on Earth.
I just want to say you've described, I think, an ominous picture, to say the least, and we better get our head around what it means for all of us. We're visiting with Rick Fisher of the International Assessment and Strategy Center, one of the country's real duty experts on the Chinese and their weapons programs and ambitions. And Rick, give us a sense of to what end? Do they really envision themselves being the world's hegemon? And what might that mean, if so, for freedom-loving peoples in their region and beyond?
It is often assessed, Frank, that the Chinese want to be the preeminent world power by 2050. And this is not just a measure in military terms, although that will be the most visible aspect. China is very quickly developing networks of political and economic power all around the globe that over time will come to accept its military power. For example, China is stoking the conflict over the Falkland Islands. No war has to be fought. All that has to happen is that Argentina has enough military power to force the British into some kind of long-term surrender. And then China becomes the new strategic guarantor of half of the American hemisphere. And this process is already underway, well underway in Africa, well underway in Central Asia. And before too long, I think, especially looking at approaches to Turkey, military cooperation programs between China and Turkey, China will increasingly corner us in NATO as well.
This is a really dire circumstance, even if it is a kind of longer term program. The Chinese, of course, are famous for their strategic vision and their willingness patiently to work away at these sorts of things. I guess what I want to get at with you as well, Rick Fisher, drawing upon, among other things, the Zhuhai air show this week, is how fast some of these capabilities seem to be developing. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the stealth fighter programs of China, the supersonic anti-surface, anti-ship cruise missile programs, and their nuclear modernization as evidence of a country that may not actually be pursuing all this all that patiently. It's aggressively doing so.
Frank, China has become a cornucopia of military technology, not only for its own modernization, but increasingly to try to dominate global arms markets. In 1998, there were key logistic reforms, tried to get at corruption, really didn't eliminate that. But what they did do was take a vastly redundant military development and production sector and give them all lunch money to become competitive. So now there are four families of precision-guided bombs, two families of stealth fighters, and the list goes on and on and on. And at the Zhuhai show this week, we saw yet another burst of this cornucopia from a new stealth fighter version from the Shenyang Aircraft Corporation to a third supersonic anti-ship missile based on Russian technology, most likely, to a new mobile emergency space launch system that could very well be used as an anti-satellite interceptor for low Earth and medium Earth orbits. We're just seeing the beginning, really, of a tsunami of Chinese military technologies that are going to be unleashed on world markets.
You know, I'm kind of inclined to think of this, Rick Fisher, as the counterpart to what Franklin Roosevelt used to say it was the case with the United States before and in the early days of World War II, namely that we were the arsenal of democracy. Is it an exaggeration to say that the given the principal customers for the Chinese that the People's Republic is becoming the arsenal of dictatorship or despotism?
Indeed, Frank, that's very well put. Arsenal of dictatorships, arsenal of authoritarianism, arsenal of anti-democratic movements around the globe.
A major entrant, in other words, in the war for the free world, as I call it, and very much prejudicial to our interests in that war. Rick, let me turn to something else you've been covering, and that is the effort of one of those outcroppings of freedom in the region immediately surrounding China and ever more at risk from the Chinese ballistic missile programs and aircraft capabilities, longer and longer range and even amphibious warfare capacity. And that is Taiwan. And you've talked a little bit about the effort that the Taiwanese have been making to protect themselves against very adamant opposition from China and very uneven help, notably from us in other parts of the free world. Where are the Taiwanese these days, and what are their prospects?
Well, Frank, you're very well right to point out that there's been a constant battle in Washington, really since the 1950s, to accomplish positive policies that have supported Taiwan and allowed Taiwan to transition from an authoritarian government to a democracy. It is now today firmly a democracy, but yet its diplomatic space is being taken away by China. There are too many policymakers in Washington that are afraid to support this vital democracy and simply refuse to understand that if Taiwan is allowed to be conquered by China, that it will become a missile, air, and nuclear submarine base that will split the Pacific and allow China to dominate the Pacific. Most recently, we see wavering on the part of the Obama administration over whether to support an indigenous Taiwanese program to build their own submarines. This is not selling them submarines, which would be more provocative to China. This is a program to build their own submarines.
Rick Fisher of the International Assessment and Strategy Center, thank you for your extraordinarily important work. Keep it up, and we'll talk again very soon. Next up, Bill Gertz joins us. We'll talk about, the Chinese and others trying to close down our space defense capabilities and the military of this country being sidelined by the Obama administration. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. is like the great Gothic churches of Europe that inspired it, a Christian house of worship.
Tomorrow, however, it will be consecrated by Muslim Brotherhood operatives to their God, Allah. That will be just one of the appalling but entirely predictable consequences of a decision by the cathedral's clergy to allow prominent adherents to the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia to conduct a prayer service in their facility. In addition, this event will occur inside a national shrine to Christian faith and religious tolerance on the 100th anniversary of an edict by the last Ottoman emperor to launch a genocidal jihad against Armenian and other followers of Christ. Worst of all, Islamists are engaging in similar murderous jihadism against Christians and others right now. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Center for Security Policy Senior Fellow Fred Flights. With the nuclear talks with Iran possibly ending by a November 24 deadline, an important question is being ignored by the news media. Just how close is Iran to making a nuclear weapon? Well, Iran is much closer to constructing a nuclear bomb than the Obama administration will admit. Using its 9,000 uranium centrifuges, Iran could make enough nuclear fuel for one weapon in 2.2 to 3.5 months. Iran has enough reactor-grade uranium to fuel at least 7 nuclear bombs, possibly more. The agreement being negotiated with Iran reportedly will not reduce the number of bombs Tehran can construct and may only lengthen this deadline by 2 weeks. The nuclear talks amount to appeasement of Iran. Congress should therefore renounce these talks and demand a new approach that fully addresses the threat from Iran's nuclear program. This is Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I am thrilled to say we are joined, as we get to be most weeks, by Bill Gertz, one of the country's preeminent national security journalists and analysts and savants, really. He works for the Washington Free Beacon as its senior editor and also as a prize-winning columnist at the Washington Times. His Inside the Ring column is really required reading in official Washington, and it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk with him about its contents and more. Bill, welcome back. Good to have you with us, as always.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Bill, we've just been talking with Rick Fisher, one of the people I know you admire as well in the space monitoring what's happening with the Chinese. And he was talking about how the Chinese have a very explicit purpose of being able, in the not-too-distant future, to control the Earth-Moon domain, as he put it. In other words, space is a very high priority for them. They understand its ability to allow them to dominate what happens on the planet. And yet, we're at the cusp, according to your report in the Washington Free Beacon today, of moving forward on a potential deal of one kind or another in the arms control domain with the Chinese, among others, without the consent or perhaps even the adequate involvement of the United States military. What's going on?
This is part of the Obama administration's aggressive arms control-centered national security agenda. They believe that arms control agreements, whether they're abided by, whether they constrain the United States, are more important than the concept of peace through strength. And what's taking place here, two members of Congress, Doug Lamborn of Colorado, Republican, and David Vitter, a senator from Democratic senator from Louisiana, wrote to Frank Rose, is the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Space and Strategic Systems. And he's been freelancing, according to these members, basically trying to work a deal on some kind of arms control that has to do with a code of conduct. Now, this code of conduct has been opposed by the Pentagon's joint staff as far back as 2012, when this was an issue for then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, trying to constrain our ability to conduct space operations.
With good reason, because in fact, that's exactly what the Chinese have in mind. And as you've documented for years now, Bill, those who use arms control as a kind of lawfare against us almost always can secure advantage by restricting our capabilities and programs and allowing them to steal a march on us. This is evident in a couple of other areas too, Bill, and I don't think we've discussed them, but talk a little bit about landmines, another capability that the military believes they need to preserve. These are self-deactivating landmines. They're not the kind that are causing problems to children and innocent civilians all over the world that others use. But we're being told we have to get rid of all of ours. Again, over the express objectives, of, I understand it, of the Pentagon.
Yes, this is another one of those issues that, again, you have these activists outside the Pentagon who have been actively working against landmines, thinking that these weapons are somehow cruel and inhuman. And, of course, from a military perspective, they're urgently needed. And yet the Obama administration, again, is showing that it really doesn't care about those kinds of issues. They're only interested in appeasing certain advocacy groups like these anti-landmine groups, and they're trying to restrict it, even though commander in charge of forces in Korea has said, look, this is one area where we absolutely need landmines. So I think they're going to give them some kind of a waiver for that. But it's a troubling, again, a troubling culture of arms control mania within the Obama administration, where they really don't care about national security and the whole concept of peace through strength.
One question that occurs, Bill, is where's Congress in all of this? There's a new Congress coming in, and maybe things will be better under that regime. We hope so. But at the moment, it really seems, whether you're talking about these kinds of actions or the dispatch of a C-17 aircraft to China, again, over the military's objections because of concerns about technology transfer, or purges of senior military officers, or social experimentation, all of this, which really seems calculated, if not, it's certainly a weird litany of things that would have the effect of undermining morale and diminishing readiness and perhaps breaking the all-volunteer force. And Congress does not seem to be interposing any serious objection. We're now told, Bill, that that there's going to be an executive agreement on this amnesty business and on the Iranian deal to boot. Is this evidence of the administration's contempt for what's left of congressional authority, which doesn't seem to be being exercised very much at all?
It's a huge problem, especially now. This is an especially dangerous period because we're in the lame duck end of Congress, and they're going to try to push through a number of these initiatives and things because the Republicans will be coming into power with full control over both the House and Senate. And it's really urgent that the Republicans in Congress really insist that the administration be held accountable to the voice of the American people in the last election, which resoundingly rejected these Obama administration policies. And if the Republicans think that they've come into office to compromise and to, quote, be bipartisan and not stop these policies, they're sadly mistaken. The American people don't want that. They want them to do the right policies. And it's, so it's really important for the Republican leaders and the Republican members in Congress to take an active role and really, again, putting policy to the voice of the American people in the last election.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, Bill, because I'm not sure that many of your colleagues in the Fourth Estate have really understood or internalized, at least, that I think fairly evident message from the voters this year, that they felt insecure. They felt the policies of our government were creating conditions that were putting them at real risk, whether it was Ebola or whether it was the Islamic State or whether it was you know, the hollowing out of the military or the Iranian bomb. And a course correction doesn't certainly seem necessary. And I pray you're right that there will be some evidence of it in the Congress, if not during this lame duck session, for sure in the new year. Let me ask you one other question, Bill. It's gotten a little bit of play as a result of some rather strident statements that the Obama administration has made in the recent past and very lately, in fact, when challenged on it. The question of what our ally, Israel, did to exercise real restraint in the conduct of their war in Gaza, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, spoke rather forcefully about this in the course of a press conference recently, and he said he believed that the Israelis had indeed gone to great lengths to try to prevent undesirable, certainly, and wherever possible, unnecessary casualties on the part of civilians. He's kind of been slapped down by the administration. What does this, again, say about the attitude of the administration towards its military? And what do you think a General Dempsey and those elsewhere in the ranks make of it?
Well, it's clear that the Obama administration has imposed a political litmus test on military leadership. They've purged conservative military leaders, warrior culture types, and they've imposed this standard if you want a promotion, you have to go along with all of these policies, which for the military has meant an increase in social engineering, in integrating women into frontline combat units, gays in the military, the whole part and parcel. Dempsey has been a leader in that sense. He has clearly taken the very political liberal line. I don't think he's been fully supportive of the military's interests within the interagency. And it's not clear whether the other chiefs that are under him are along that same boat, but it's clear that they haven't protested enough to some of the outrageous things that the administration has done to the military.
But even so, they're being treated with, it seems now, fairly naked contempt. And shame on the administration and, well, for that matter, shame on some of these military leaders who are not doing more to stand up for the interests, not just, again, of the uniformed services themselves, but, of course, of the American people that we count on them to protect the rest of us. Bill, thank you so much. A quick tour de raison of your many things that you're covering brilliantly at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, Fred Flights, career intelligence professional, on Iran's provocation and the bad deal that's coming on its nuclear program. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined for this installment by Fred Flights, a senior and very distinguished career intelligence professional, having served for about 20 years in the Central Intelligence Agency as an analyst and then as the chief of staff of then Undersecretary of State John Bolton, and then as one of the members of the professional staff of the House Intelligence Committee. I'm very pleased to say today he is a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. We're always delighted to have him with us, especially, Fred, as you have been following throughout your distinguished career, but especially closely of late. What is going on with the Iranian nuclear program and President Obama's determined effort to get some kind of deal, apparently irrespective of the terms, with them with respect to it? First of all, let me just again say thank you for joining us. Good to have you.
Good to be here, Frank. We've known since the president was inaugurated that he was desperate for a legacy-making agreement with Iran. We've recently seen that we have upped the ante even further. We conceded to Iran the right to enrich uranium, which was an enormous concession just to get the talks started. Recently, we heard that we're going to allow Iran to operate up to 6,000 uranium centrifuges, which would probably be about for one weapon per year. We're not going to let them get rid of existing centrifuges or get rid of their stockpiled low-enriched uranium. They can make up to 7 nuclear weapons, probably more than that, with their current stockpile of reactor-grade uranium. If enriched to weapons-grade, they could do that in less than 4 months. We have a situation here where we just see such desperation for a deal. We're giving away the kitchen sink, and the Iranians are giving nothing.
And what's really even more astounding, Fred Flights, is that they are exhibiting increasingly their naked contempt for this president and, I guess, for the rest of us as well. Talk, Fred, a little bit about this secret letter that the president sent to Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, with respect to both the nuclear deal and the idea of cooperating with Iran on the Islamic State business and the response that it's received from the Iranians.
We've seen two very confusing letters. President Obama sent a letter to Supreme Leader Khamenei saying that, well, we can't cooperate against ISIS unless we get a nuclear deal by the 24th of November, which is the deadline for the agreement. And I've been arguing, I think a lot of experts have been arguing, that the only thing we should be saying to Iran about ISIS and the situation in Iraq is Iran should stop meddling in Iraqi affairs. Well, the Iranians reply to this deal with a tweet by the Supreme Leader with 9 ways that the state of Israel should be wiped off the map.
Not exactly evidence of the kind of cooperation and responsible statesmanship that one would want, needless to say, Fred. But more to the point, this is evidence, isn't it, of the abiding determination of the Iranians not only to eliminate what they call the little Satan, but their hostility, in fact, towards us as well, the so-called great Satan.
That's exactly right. And there was a statement this week by the Iranian foreign minister who said, everything you've heard about concessions we may be making is wrong. And every time we hear a discussion about negotiations and possible concessions by Iran, we have a statement by Iranian officials calling for outrageous concessions by the United States. The Supreme Leader of Iran wants to operate 190,000 uranium centrifuges. This is not a serious negotiation. This is a massive giveaway by the United States that will allow Iran to continue to proceed toward nuclear weapons.
And Fred, again, as a career professional in the intelligence space who's long monitored what the Iranians are about and their thinking and their practices, isn't this really, at the end of the day, quite apart from whatever terms might be hammered out, this has been a wild success from the Iranians' point of view simply because it's bought them time. And if in no other way, we see them almost certainly beavering away in covert areas and activities. This opposition group called the MEK, a rather colorful outfit, and problematic in some respects, but nonetheless has been helpful in exposing some activities that the Iranians have been trying to conceal from us, says that there may already be 5 times the number of centrifuges operating in Iran that we've been led to believe otherwise. And Fred, doesn't this really bespeak the larger problem that, deal or no deal, the Iranians have gotten out of this mostly what they want, which is more time and some relief from sanctions to boot?
That's exactly right. Several times over the last 10 years, nuclear facilities were discovered in Iran that U.S. intelligence didn't know about, and it made a significant difference. This includes the Fordo underground enrichment facility that's been hardened to protect it against attack. Iran cheated on an interim deal signed last November to start the talk. So during the negotiations this year, Iran's been cheating on the deal. They refused to cooperate with the IAEA. They've developed centrifuges in violation of the deal last year, and according to a recent IAEA report, they have been testing these centrifuges with uranium hexafluoride, a direct violation of the deal. So how can we trust the IAEA to enforce a new deal, given Iran's cheating, and the fact there's a record of Iran having covert facilities that the CIA hasn't been able to detect.
Fred, you said enforce. I don't think you mean that we expect them to enforce it, but if they can't even monitor violations of these agreements, and they can't perform the kind of function, as you say, that they're supposed to be performing even before there is a deal, it certainly does not bode well for their ability to play any kind of useful role going forward. And I must say, as you've taught me over the years, Fred, it's got a checkered record, the IAEA. It's been doing rather better under its present management than in the past, but relying on it under these circumstances is a mug's game, I'm afraid. Fred, let me turn to one other issue. I know you have been talking with members of Congress. I discussed this issue with Bill Gertz in the previous segment, that the president's determination is to sideline, marginalize, make irrelevant the Congress, even the Senate, which is supposed to ratify, serve as a check and balance on these kinds of very problematic treaties or agreements. We're hearing from a group called the Truman Center in Washington in a rather indiscreet email that got leaked, that they're out championing this agreement irrespective of its contents, determined to try to suppress basically criticism and get the thing blown through the Congress in some fashion or simply supported more broadly. Talk a little bit about what all this portends, Fred, in terms of both the role of the Congress in which you served for so long and the degree to which we're going to see this kind of, propaganda operation mounted by friends of the administration to help blow smoke about this deal to the rest of us.
Well, the Truman Center pretends to be an independent think tank, but it's really staffed by former Obama officials. And they sent out an email lately saying, all hands on deck, we have to start hitting the media, writing op-eds to sing the praises of this nuclear deal with Iran. And I think this is going to be true of other think tanks in Washington, other liberal think tanks. They want an agreement no matter what the cost. And I think they're walking in lockstep with this administration. And you can see the effect on the media. There's a lot of false arguments that have been made about the merits of this deal and what the U.S. has agreed to and what Iran has agreed to. And the media simply is swallowing hook, line, and sinker what these groups are saying. So, I mean, that's why the center, I think, has been out in front. And our website has had some very good analysis on what's really been agreed to in this deal and the dangers that Iran's nuclear program poses and how the negotiations are not doing anything to address them.
You've done a superb job, Fred, of documenting this, and your PowerPoint presentation is really something that I hope everybody will take a look at in the near future. It's incalculably important that we get to the ground truth of what's happening here and what the implications are. We thank you for that and the analysis, some of which you've just referred to, and all the great work that you do, Fred, as part of your continuing service to our country. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon. We'll talk with the rest of you, I hope, again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.